Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And yes, Prashantinilayam is getting filled up minute by minute. Scores and hundreds of devotees are streaming in to offer their love, their reverence and their gratitude to Bhagwan on Aradhana Day. The function will begin 12 hours from now in Sai Kulwant Hall. And the Aradhana Day is rightly named so because it is a day of prayer. It is a day of introspection. It is a day of internal reflection for every devotee, for everyone who loves Swami, for everyone who connects to Sri Satya Sai. Yes, to thousands and millions, it is a day of deep sorrow. It is a day which reminds you of a pain which is too much to bear. For many of us, we never ever imagined that we would actually live to see this day. Even if that thought came, you always just brushed it aside because it was too painful to even consider such a thing. And most of us who have experienced the love of Bhagwan, experienced His touch, experienced His smile, you know, you wonder that you have still survived. You still are carrying on. You actually have lived on after April 24, 2011. So it is a day of intense agony, especially when those memories flood your mind, when you think of His lovely form, when you think of that beautiful smile for which you traversed thousands of miles and stayed put in Prashantinilayam just to get that glimpse, you know, that touch, that millisecond gesture, that slight glow of orange that you wanted to preserve in your heart, even the dust of His feet, kiss on the ground He walked, just touch His car or just see His hair, breathe that air filled with the sublime presence that He is. And if any point in time your eyes met His, well, that's it. I mean, there's nothing else that you thought you should live for. You felt you can give up everything. You can just call it a day because your life is done. I mean, what else is worth living and striving for in this world? Everything else that has to be achieved, that has to be experienced, is experienced. Everything else is lackluster. Everything else is tasteless compared to that bliss when in that moment He sees you and you see Him and you see each other within and without. That is that ethereal ananda, and that only an avatar can grant. And when all these thoughts surface your mind, it just becomes an ocean of misery, because these are moments when time stood still in your life, and these are the moments which give meaning to your life, and you know that these moments are history now. Very difficult to let go of that pain that you will never be able to experience this again. It's an eternally irreparable loss. So yes, the Aradhana Day sends us into this abyss in a manner of sorts, an abyss of intense agony. At the same time, I have reflected on April 24th, 2011, and what has also come to me is that is the day of Easter. Swami chose the day of Easter to do this drama, and that has led me to think that maybe there is something there for us. Maybe the Aradhana day is not to be observed as a day of mourning and sadness and crying. Because the day of Easter was the day that marked the beginning of a paradigm shift in the life of hundreds and thousands more than 2000 years ago. Christianity would not be what it is today if the disciples of Jesus had not felt him so strongly, had not felt him or experienced him so powerfully on that day. Jesus did not come back in flesh and blood, but they felt him so convincingly that the experience was so great and it was so powerfully compelling for them to go out and do something that they now decided to farm out to different lands and share the message of the Lord with unstoppable passion and with a sense of absolute dedication. The day of Easter is one of the greatest turning points in his story, the story of God as man, which shocked the followers of Jesus out of their stubborn slumber and disbanded the doubts and suspicions about the Lord once and for all. In fact, the single most mind-shattering event which instantaneously instilled faith in the confused and closed hearts and minds of thousands more than 2 million ago was this day, and that process continues even now. And when I think of Aradhana Day in this light, the day acquires a completely new perspective. Because I tend to think that this is what it has done. Initially, I too, like many others, felt that the way Swami left was all too sudden, too abrupt, too unplanned, too unexpected. Everything is in disarray and everything needs to be put together. He was the person who was supposed to fix all this. And he just left all of us high and dry. It seemed like that at that point in time. But later, after a few weeks and months, and when I was able to compose myself, then it appeared to me that maybe it was not all that unplanned. Maybe the signs were coming for so many years. Maybe we didn't realize it. Maybe we ignored it. And now I know that it was all planned. I mean, there is no accident in the divine drama. And this day indeed was meant to be that day which will usher in that long awaited change in our lives, that shift in our thinking, that much needed alteration in the way we related to Swami, the way we understood Swami, and the way we experienced him in our lives. Very recently I was talking to a teenager born in a Sai family in Bangalore, Miss Sai Kirtana. And when I asked her what the Aradhana Day meant for her, she said, "Well, I grew up virtually under Bhagwan's eyes, because right from the time I was born, I came into this world, I have had darshans of Swami, I grew up seeing Swami, basking in his presence and experiencing the beauty of his darshans. And every time I saw him, I always connected to him. It was always a new level of connection. Every time I saw him, darshan was so elevating. And I longed to come and see him again and again. And if Swami was in Vrindavan in Bangalore, I would never miss an opportunity to go and be in Sai Rameshwar." And then she said, "Once this was withdrawn, when he was no more there physically, now I missed him. So what I did was I spent more time in prayer. And one thing that started happening now is I started talking to Swami. And I would now sit in front of his photo and talk and tell him everything. And I would do that at different points of time during the day. But then slowly I realized that these conversations with Swami were not limited to the time I was sitting in front of his photo. It's almost as if Swami retreated from the photo into my mind, and this conversation were constantly happening. They were happening in my mind. And earlier I used to look for physical signs of His presence, you know, of His suggestions, of His directions. You wanted a flower to fall, you wanted something interesting to happen. You were looking for these tiny miracles. And what I experienced is, once I started this conversation with Swami, the beauty is that I heard Swami reply. I was talking, and there were times I knew that it is not me, it is He who is replying. I was able to differentiate between my voice and Swami's voice. This just happened. And she says in 2013, December 2013, I had a difficult time. And I was talking to Him all the time during this period. And I used to get this message from Him, you know, He used to say it will all be fine. This is just, you're undergoing something because this is good for your growth in terms of your character. That is why you're going through it. Don't worry. And in 1 week that got settled. And she says, so from that day, I never started looking for these physical signs of His replies because things were just happening. And one very revealing thing that happened to me was Swami always used to say that I am there in you, I am there in each one of you. Now, earlier those were just words, but now these words acquired meaning to me because whenever I needed Him to tell me, you know, it would come directly, it would come through someone else, it would come through another person, and I really now, that whole meaning of I am there in each one of you has acquired a completely new dimension for me. And I don't feel alone now. I don't feel disconnected now. Earlier I felt connected only when I saw Him, but now in this changed circumstances, this connection is much stronger. And it is all pervasive. And she says, so even though I used to go and see Swami so often, it was not as if I had a lot of interactions with Him at the physical level. So there was always a distance. And I always chose to connect with Him at another level. And today I feel that this is what Swami is telling me. See, this is how I prepared you. This is how I structured your entire life. And this is what I have made your internal being. So now follow this. And she says, so now, for me, connecting with Him is simple. You just talk to Him. It's not complicated at all. So when I heard her, you know, I just got a glimpse of the impact of what we observe on Aradhana Day has had in her and so many like her, in each one of us. And today I think it is the time to reflect on all of these. We enrich from each other's experience, each other's journey, each other's story of our love. And joining me in this reflection tonight is a very devoted and dedicated Sevadar brother from Delhi, Mr. Amit Sood. Mr. Amit works as the Vice President Sales and Marketing, TIL Limited. It's a heavy equipment manufacturing company. So we will have a live conversation with him on what Aradhana Day means to him. And after that I will play for you excerpts of a very special conversation that I had with Mr. K. Chakravarti, a very familiar figure in Prashanthi Nilayam, the former Secretary of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust and now a trustee. One of those distinguished devotees who spent 3 decades living in His divine proximity and executing the commands by the Master. So we listen to him as to what sort of an impact April 24 has had on him. So all this for you in the next 45 minutes or so in this last segment of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the Day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and the time in the studios now is 8:54, and as I mentioned, today our discussion is on the enveloping emptiness and experiencing the cosmic fullness. And as I mentioned, Brother Amit Sood from Delhi is here with us. Welcome, brother, to the studios of Radio Sai and to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. So as I was just mentioning about this enveloping emptiness, if you can share what is Aradhana Day for you and how it was when you heard about what happened on April 24, 2011.
This is some story to talk about. When I think about 2011 April, my thoughts go back a couple of years before that. And Swami, in one of the prayers that in which I was sitting, surprised me with the thought of what happens if he suddenly chooses to leave his body. This was a couple of years before 2011. I was completely taken by surprise. This is a thought that you cannot reconcile with. In fact, it appeared very blasphemous to me. How can, when Swami is amongst us, how can I suddenly think about a time when he wouldn't be with us?
And I was all shaking. My hands were wet with sweat. My pulse was racing in prayer, just with this thought that came to my mind. What if Swami was to suddenly leave? And this was a couple of years before 2011. Thoughts that were coming to my mind was, the world will come to a halt all of a sudden. Newspapers would be full of this event. And how would we reconcile? How would I reconcile? How would my parents reconcile, who have been with Swami for the last 40 years? How would so many devotees reconcile? It was very, very difficult for me to understand. And I could not pray any longer. I think for several weeks, this thought, whenever I would sit down in prayer, would trouble me. I do not know. In fact, I used to feel guilty that this is a blasphemous thought. But then this thought started emerging in my mind that Swami says he's not just this body. It's false on our part to place him just within his body. It's for us to understand that he's with us, in us, and all around us. And it began little by little that I started telling myself he's within me. And I need to have a conversation with him inside. Listen to him inside. And so it's fine. So everything will be fine because I will know that he's with me. Gradually, the prayers turned more peaceful. I started enjoying much more because now I could have a little bit of peaceful time with Swami. Sometimes a little conversation, but sometimes just sitting together and being peaceful with him. But this started a couple of years before. And so when...
So this was happening in 2009, 2010?
Yeah, I was really surprised too. And I do not know why he chose to give me those thoughts, but that's how it happened. And I was really very nervous in those days. That
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. You wonder, why am I getting these thoughts? Yeah,
exactly. But then 2011 came, and, you know, before we come to April, I think we had a prelude to that period, which was a couple of months, maybe 4 months, of intensive prayers almost all around the world. And Delhi too was experiencing that.
Yes.
There were some places where a couple of hundred people will assemble and there would be prayers. And there was
in Delhi you had in Gurudwaras also, right?
Absolutely. And then there were some places where we would get together at a small residence. I remember going from office at a time which was almost post dinner and sitting into a prayer where just around 24 people are sitting, some people in kurta pajama because they have come after dinner and they are coming straight from home, and others like me who were coming from office in a suit, and all of us will sit through the night reciting either Mahamrityunjaya Mantra or Sai Gayatri, and we'll sit through the night praying with most earnest hearts. just praying to Swami to cure himself. Now this thought itself was very strange to me at that time. Who do you pray to cure whom?
Yes.
But then this went on for several weeks, if not months. And so this period of earnest prayer done with so many devotees together was in itself a very, very, very blissful time. It was somber.
Yes.
It was earnest. It was melancholy. But then we were all together in this.
There was it was a time of great unity also, isn't it?
Amazing unity.
Now, devotees, whatever little differences you had also, you forgot everything. And everyone was very, very one in that feeling that, you know, let's come together and let's just pray with all our heart out.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are prayers in which you sit, in which some people are silent, some people are a little quiet, some people are participating in bhajans, and others are just listening to it. This was no such prayer. Here, everybody, as long as they would sit, would recite whatever mantram was going on. Wholeheartedly, some would shed tears. And the people would take out time, whatever little time they could, and sit through the night. I remember we were having people coming down at 11 o'clock in the night and sitting through in the morning.
My God.
Amazing period. So what I think is this period gave people tremendous strength for what lied ahead. I do not think we, in the end, were praying for Swami to cure his body. We were actually praying that Swami gives us strength. We just didn't know that that is what we were praying for. And Swami chose to use this prayer to create tremendous forbearance in his devotees. So when it actually happened, it just came and we were still able to bear it. Otherwise, the thought that I had when it first occurred to me, it looked like, oh my goodness, the earth would come to, world would come to an end. But then the news came. I remember I was at a bhajan in a slum, and we came to know that this is the development. Immediately we booked ourselves to come to Prashantinilayam. But this is what the part I want to share with you. When we landed here, there was a miracle almost everywhere to see. As soon as we landed to Prashantinilayam, or just around when we were driving, because some of the roads were closed, we were going through various villages. There were villages outside their homes, and this was April, it's peak of summer, very, very hot. There were villagers offering water, there were villagers offering juices, bananas, even rice to thousands of people who had gathered. There was love in every direction. It was very, very hot, believe me, when we were just driving into, and there were roads closed, so we had to walk several miles sometimes. But almost everywhere there were people off, taking care of people who were coming into Prashantinilayam. Amazing. Coming into Prashantinilayam, where the prayers were taking place, where the rituals were happening.
Unprecedented stream of love that you saw. Actually, you had seen, even I remember, there were this youth from Hyderabad who had come and, you know, who had set up so many places to cook prasadam. And, you know, they were there serving prasadam because there was a long queue of devotees. I think Prashantinilayam had never before had seen that long queues. And one scene is very alive in my mind. And that is this youth member from Hyderabad who was crying out at the top of his voice, urging people to take the prasadam.
Absolutely. This was almost everywhere. You know, it was not just at a corner somewhere where a group of people were serving. We went around almost 20 kilometers around looking for the way to come in. There were several places where we found the gates closed. But it was amazing to see villagers taking care of guests or devotees who were coming in. And you know, Vishu, my heart broke, not for my own sorrow. My heart broke for people who had spent such extraordinary time closest to Swami. You know, for me, Swami was still physically a little bit away. You know, I could have conversations within my heart to Swami who lied inside my heart. But I was forever listening to stories of devotees and students who were having extraordinary laughter with Swami, lots of fun, lots of affection, tremendous amount of love that Swami showered on them. How would they be able to cope? What broke my heart was just to imagine how would they adjust? How would they let go of such love? That, I tell you, when I was driving in, that was breaking my heart. When I came here, when we were sitting in Kulwant Hall, that itself, you know, is something to tell. In Kulwant Hall, there were thousands of devotees gathered. For some time, there were rituals taking place. So there was general silence. And then the audience was for some time, there were bhajans, and there was some participation in bhajans. After that, there was silence. I could see a few people were shedding tears, but people were generally in control, you know, parents, students, elderly, young. There were many people, thousands sitting around me. But there was tremendous self-control that people were showing. And then spontaneously, from somewhere among the crowd, Sai Gayatri started. First as a murmur, and then together. Then everybody was one in it. You see, that time, the Sai Gayatri was not initiated by a loudspeaker from a central voice. It started from the crowd. It was in itself an amazing experience in which everyone was one in prayer. And then still people were in control. I felt that thousands whom I could see around me were generally in control. And then they finally moved Swami. And they started moving the body towards the Samadhi. That's when I could... when you could hear elders, young, sobbing loudly, that's when all of us lost control. How could they take him away from us? It was a very, very difficult time. Then the Sai Gayatri turned louder. People started earnestly, loudly trying to give strength to each other with Sai Gayatri. And it went on and on and on. It was a day that I'll never forget in my life. I've been to a variety of prayers, variety of events, variety of bhajans, in which I've also been deeply, deeply touched. I've shed tears. But this was a prayer that one cannot forget. You do not want to let go of him. Even if you have not had those experiences personally, they are there all around you. How would you hear of new experiences if he goes away like that? What would happen to the people with whom such experiences happened? How could you let him go? It was tough. It still is.
Yes. Well, I think it definitely has been a challenge for all those people who have worked with him very closely, for all those people who experienced what it is to experience love, when love functions and eats and walks and lives with you. I remember the author of Anyatha Sharanam Nasti, Vijayamma Garu, saying that only when we came to Swami, that is when we realized what is love.
Absolutely.
So I know, yes, it really has been very difficult for all these people, and towards later in this session, we will hear to Mr. Chakravarti. He's someone who lived with Swami for more than 30 years. How it was for him to undergo all this and eventually in some manner overcome this. But before that, I want to ask you also, how was it for you after this in terms of carrying on his work? Did it make any difference? Was it in any way different than before? Because you are someone who is so engaged in so many of Bhagwan's initiatives, the projects of the Sri Satya Sai organization in New Delhi, and you give so much of your time, your resources, your energy. What sort of an impact did this event have in your engagement in Bhagwan's mission?
There are thousands, Pishu, in Delhi who are engaged in intense sadhana in form of seva right now. And I think what gives them strength right now is the message that rings loud. That it's our message, our life which is his message now. We have to live a life which would be his message. And how could we let even a moment pass in which we would not live a life in a manner in which it would not be true to his word? So many people are around us who inspire us with the intense work that they are doing constantly. I think Radio Sai is full of stories too which inspire wonders all of so many of us. I think even after April 2011, this gets even stronger. This sense of urgency that we have to live this life intensely, living a life into the perfection of his word, it gets even stronger. That's what I feel, and I think this is what is shared by so many others in Delhi too.
And that is what propels us to be more in tune with his message and dedicate our time and effort in his work.
Very true. Absolutely. This is what inspires us. This is what keeps us going.
Wonderful. I'm just reminded of that beautiful Qawwali that Swami loved. Mohabbat ki kami dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai, zara jhanko to paoge ki sai paas hota hai. Brother Ravi Kumar, he has sung it so many times in front of Bhagwan. And I remember him saying that, you know, the Qawwali then goes further, sai bina raha na jaye. And, you know, he was saying that he used to wonder, you know, I have sung this so many times in front of Bhagwan, Sai bina raha na jaye, Sai bina raha na jaye, but I am still there and Swami is not there anymore. But Swami made me sing this so many times, so there should be something in it. And then he says, only then I reflected on the opening alap. And now he says it makes so much meaning. Mohabbat ki kami, agar dil mein ehsaas hota hai. You know, if you really feel the lack of love, all you have to do is just go with it. Zara jhanko to paoge sai paas hota hai. And he says that now, this whole Qawwali has, now you know why Swami made him sing so many times. I mean, one of the reasons, I mean, you know, you the whole process of listening to this has acquired such a beautiful dimension, a new dimension.
Very true, very true. And you put it so beautifully, and this Qawwali itself has inspired millions.
So I thought we will listen to the Qawwali now before we move on to listening to the conversation that we had with Mr. K. Chakravarti. Thank you so much, Brother Amit.
Thank you so much.
Mohabbat ki kami dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai, zara jhaanko to paoge ki sai paas hota hai. O karishma ye usi ka hai ki duniya khoobsurat lagti hai, varna aadmi ko aadmi kya raas hota hai. Sai bin raha na jaye, Sai bin Sai bin raha na jaye, Sai bin raha na jaye, Chain na aaye mohe, chain na aaye, chain na aaye mohe, chain na aaye, bin raha na jaye, sai bin raha na जब से देखा तुझको साई मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे जब से है देखा तुझको साई मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे मिट मर जाए तुझ पे हमसे न रूठे तू जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यूं जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यूं जिंदगी सौंप दे हम मन मंदिर से जाओ न साए मन मंदिर चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए साई बिन रहा न जाए दर्शन मेरी सब सांसे भी तेरी तुझ पे कुर्बान हो ए जीवन तुझ पे कुर्बान हो ए जीवन अब तमन्ना है ये मेरी अब तमन्ना है ये मेरी बस तमन्ना है ये मेरी तुझ पे कुर्बान हो ये जीवन अब तमन्ना है ये मेरी साई बिन रहा न जाए साई बिन चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए साई बिन रहा न जाए साई बिन साई बिन रहा न जाए
Jai, without Swami, how can I manage? How can I live? As Brother Amit Sood just mentioned, for the people who worked closely with Bhagwan, who lived with Bhagwan, literally basking in his physical presence, he was feeling that more than him, the pain for them would be very difficult. So let us now listen to how it was for Mr. K. Chakravarti. Mr. Chakravarti is a very distinguished Indian administrative service officer who served for 15 years in various central and state government offices during the 80s, late 70s and early 80s. He was the collector of the Anandpur campus, Anandpur district. And it is during this time that he happened to come to Puttaparthi, and that visit to Puttaparthi is what changed his life forever. When the university started in 1981, Bhagwan gave him the chance of being the first registrar of the university, a responsibility which he discharged until 1994, and then Bhagwan conferred on him the being the secretary of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, and he continued to hold this position until Bhagwan's earthly sojourn, and after that he is now guiding the trust along with other distinguished elders as one of the trustees of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. So let us listen to him as to what April 24, 2011 meant to him, how did he cope with it, and how he reflects on this last 4 years, and what is the message in this for all of us.
Sairam, dear sir, and greetings and a warm welcome to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you.
It's an honor to have you again in the studios.
Thank you.
In a couple of days from today, we will be observing the Aradhana Day 2015. And I would like to ask you, when you reflect on April 2011 and now, what thoughts flood your mind? How has this journey been from April 24, 2011 till now? Perhaps it's a journey you thought you'll never ever make in your life.
I'm not the only one who had this feeling that a time will come when we'll have to be alone. When I say alone, that is to say physically apart from Swami. So those were the dark days, April 2011, when Swami was in the hospital and when the Mahasamadhi took place. It was a very difficult time, not only for me, but for the countless devotees of Swami. But for one who had been with him physically for nearly 30 years in Prashanti Nilayam, and having had the blessing of being with him most of the days, both morning and evening, it was a very difficult thing to overcome, great sense of void in the you have been accustomed not only to seeing him, but to receiving instructions from him, and to place our daily activities before him, and then seek further guidance from him. It was a part of our life. So when I did not have that any longer, it was quite a difficult experience to go through, and it took quite considerable time before I could ever pull myself up to face the situation that had arisen. But slowly, since we've also heard from Swami as to how we should carry on with the work entrusted to us, and especially if it happens to be the work entrusted by Swami himself regarding his own mission, there is no alternative but to really pull oneself up and to face the difficulties, whatever they may be, and to carry on work as in as normal a way as possible. It took quite a while, as I said, to regain a sense of being back in the active world. No doubt that the few weeks or even months that followed Mahasamadhi gave a sense of being, there is a disconnect as it were, know, with the external world so far as it was concerned. But then it required great efforts to shake off that feeling. When you're accustomed to having God by yourself, by your side, nothing really seemed difficult. But in his absence, physical absence, it called for a great effort to draw from your inner strength. And never having envisaged a day that I would be in this world beyond the Swami's sojourn on earth, made it very difficult for me. I'm sure this feeling must have been shared by many, many. But as functionaries of his trust and his organization, we knew that we have to get into an action mode. We have to bring ourselves to deal with the daily matters of the trust and the organization. Of course, long years of closely working with Bhagwan's institutions, most of us knew what was expected of us by him. And in a way, I suppose, even if it was not a formal training, it was a very quiet absorption of the values and systems which Swami had put in position. So while on the one hand we were aware of what we should be doing, we also required a great sense of determination on our part to draw that eternal spirit of Swami that is within us. We cannot seek Swami as a physical reality outside. It has to be drawn as the eternal spirit within me and within all of us. So the first few months, in fact, made me withdraw to some extent from the day-to-day functioning. But soon thereafter, I came to understand, to realize that the best way to do justice to Swami's mission is to get back and get seriously engaged in all the activities of the trust and the organization.
I remember the last time you were on Radio Sai, you mentioned that this is a great loss, but this loss is paradoxical because it is a loss which only propels you to do more.
Yes, because after the initial shock, you know that you have to invoke his presence within. And we have heard him during many discourses that this body is like a water bubble. But when it happened to the divine body itself, it was a shock that no amount of having listened to his discourses could lessen. So then I realized, you cannot mentally cognize this. You have to spiritually draw sustenance from the universal spirit that he is and that each one of us embodies in himself. And that is the conclusion, not, as I said, mentally cognized, but deep within me, felt and understood, that I have to really remember the teachings of Swami and find not only solace, but also regain the confidence in myself to continue to engage myself in the multifarious duties and functions of the trust and the organization.
As you mentioned that many times you'll have to call on the inner reserves of spiritual strength that Swami has suffused us within. and it calls for a lot of determination. May I ask you, in your moments of low, there are times when you perhaps would look at Swami and almost break down. Swami, why did you leave me here? How is it that, you know, you just expected me to carry on with all this and you are not there here? In those moments, are there certain interactions with Swami or certain scenes that you have witnessed personally or certain directions that He has given you which sort of become your eternal sources of inspiration, which helps you to collect your energies and get back into His work?
More than conversations with Him, it is these discourses in which, over more than 4 decades which I had the blessings to listen to, that really gave me strength. You know, in one of the discourses, Swami said, when Krishna was no longer there, how Pandavas felt absolutely lifeless, as it were. And it is one thing to hear in a discourse, it's yet another to experience that feeling of void and that utter helplessness when Swami was no longer with us. So we knew at that time that these are eternally played on the world scene by Bhagwan from age to age. And here He was, unlike other avatars, created institutions which need to be looked after, at least so far as we are concerned, what we consider to be for all time to come. We can't put a time limit. This is something which has to go on. And I'm sure with His will, successive generations of people who are going to be associated with these institutions will certainly have the wisdom and also the capacity to carry on these great institutions.
One other thing I wanted to ask is, when some of us reflect on the events preceding April 2011, for many of us, it was not even in the realm of possible outcomes what happened. And I think it was like that for so many. But I remember you saying that you too were in that position, even though you were seeing the heartbreaking condition, what was happening in the hospital, you always wanted to allow that margin of mystery because it is the avatar. And at that time, later when you think, sometimes it seems that, after all, it was not all that abrupt. Perhaps it was in some ways pre-planned. Maybe there were those signs and signals. Maybe we did not see them. Maybe we did not really realize them coming. Do you get such a feeling?
I think personally many of us didn't want even to reckon with that possibility. Therefore, even if it surfaced in your mind, you had a knack of pushing it out. Because, firstly, it is something which we cannot possibly live with at that time under the stress that was building up. But also, as you said, you cannot rule out the possibility of anything which is beyond our normal understanding that can happen. It is not merely our understanding of that latent capacity in God, which is not very visible to us, but even in a very close, personal, physical way, it was something which most of us felt, that for the sake of the devotee's prayer, Swami would again like to come back and be amidst us. Even when He was ill and there was a progressive enfeeblement, Swami would come down and say that He would like to go and give darshan. We know, and we knew at the time, that it was not possible for Swami to make that going around amidst the devotees. But the response usually was that the devotees will be disappointed if I don't go out for darshan. And more than that, I think there was a joy in him that came because he was giving joy to so many. So his own physical condition was something which was pushed into the background. When Swami comes out and his face is lighted, as it were, when you see the bright faces of so many devotees. So that gave us an indication that what is important is that spirit of Swami to do till the last whatever needs to be done for the sake of devotees. And if we are today doing work regarding his institutions, it must be the same feeling that must imbue us, that we're doing something which will give Swami the joy that he had when he saw his own devotees. So we are trying to look after these institutions as though they are visible embodiments of Swami today, and that their well-being is the equivalent of the joy of Swami at that time.
Wonderful. And as you mentioned, now your role is slightly different, because earlier you had Bhagwan who gave you instructions in the execution of various missions, but now you are suddenly in a position where, along with a few other distinguished elders, you have to drive the trust. You will have to take decisions. How has this role been?
Honestly, I cannot say that I or my colleagues are doing it. At the external level, yes, we have to do that. But more and more, the feeling comes that it is Swami who is providing the energy, and more important than that is the capacity to use our judgment to be in line with the directions he gave when he was with us. I think, I mean, it will sound pompous if I say, well, we are not the doer, Swami is the doer. It is not at an intellectual level that we understand this teaching, that give up the feeling of doership. But having been with him in practical day-to-day working, the feeling even then was that we are not doing it. It is Swami's work, he's getting it done through us. And I think there is a continuity of that feeling now, that it is he who is doing, and we seem to be continuing to do the same thing as we were doing, except for the fact, as I said, that physically we are not able to feel him.
So only the physical presence is not there, but the cosmic presence is there and he's guiding.
Yeah, I think because of long training of having done something even then, as his command that has been carried out, his will that has been exercised, his desire and his wish to be fulfilled, I think people who have been accustomed to doing that continue to have that feeling, as I said, even if he is not physically with us. It is, of course, as you said, it's a spiritual dimension normally, but in our case, possibly it is a continuation of a habit that has been ingrained in us.
In some way, Swami has prepared all of us for this in his own inimitable way.
That's what I said. It is the feeling not given to one. It is a feeling given to all of us here, whatever the task that we have entrusted to us. All of us feel that it's physically we are carrying it out, but the driving spirit is not the fading energy within, but it is the all-pervasive energy all around us.
So that is Mr. K. Chakravarti, trustee, Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. This was a small excerpt of a conversation that we recorded with him just yesterday, April 22nd. And in this conversation, which was for 90 minutes, he went on to share about the various initiatives of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust in the last 4 years and some of the new projects that are envisaged in the near future. and also about what he thinks should be our priorities in the next decade as we march on, when we will celebrate the centenary celebrations of Bhagwan's birthday 10 years from now. And in this series of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, I will bring you the other excerpts of the conversation with Mr. Chakraborty. Before we wind up this episode, I just want to share with you a few thoughts on this feeling of continuing to feel the presence of Bhagwan in our lives. As Mr. Chakraborty said, that the feeling that he is the doer just continues, and you know that you are only an instrument, and also you feel that ultimately all said and done, actually it's no emptiness, it's actually a cosmic fullness, and he is there all pervasive. You derive your energy from him, from that cosmic spirit. I remember talking to Vijay Magaru, the author of Anyata Shanam Nasti, that book which so beautifully documents the beautiful leelas of Bhagwan of the earlier times. Once her mother asked Swami, why is it that you have distanced yourself from us? Because Swami was not giving them as much time as he used to give before. And then Bhagwan explained to her mother that, see, when an infant is born, the mother gives all her attention to that first child. She is extremely concerned, and she lives every moment to see that that child is comfortable. But with time, when the second child comes along, the mother has to give attention to the second one. And when the third one comes, her focus now shifts to the third one. It does not mean that the mother does not love the first one any more or any less than before. It is just that there is someone else who needs her attention now. And in fact, it is at these times that the older ones should be supporting the mother in sharing that love that she has given them with the younger ones. And Swami said, this is what I expect you devotees to whom I have given so much to do. You must share that love that you have experienced with the new ones who are coming. The family of Sai is growing. That is the way you can experience me. That is the way you will be part of me. You will be part of my work. And when we think of the moments that we have had with Swami, I'm always reminded of Sri Rabindranath Tagore's Gitanjali, where he says, at the immortal touch of thy hands, my little heart loses its limits in joy and gives birth to it utterance ineffable. Thy tiny gifts come to me only on these very small hands of mine. Ages pass and still thou pourest, and still there is room to fill. Anyatha shanam nasti. Without you, refuge, there is none. Vijay Magaru says that, I realized why Swami named the book with this phrase. This phrase has actually acquired a new meaning. Without you, there is none. This is the goal, this is the destination, this is the path of my life. And the way to lead this path is to be pure. Rabindranath Tagore again in Gitanjali says, life of my life, I shall ever try to keep my body pure, knowing that thy living touch is upon all my limbs. I shall ever try to keep all untruth out of my thoughts, knowing that thou art the truth that has kindled the light of reason in my mind. I shall ever try to drive all evils away from my heart and keep my love in flower, knowing that thou hast thy seat in the innermost shrine of my heart. And it shall be my endeavor to reveal thee in my actions, knowing that it is thy power that gives me strength to act. As we prepare ourselves to observe the Aradhana day tomorrow, let us pray to Swami that we march on this path of purity so that one day we experience in fullness divinity, the divinity that is there everywhere. Let it become a constant presence in our lives. With this prayer and offering my gratitude to Swami for having given us this opportunity to have this day-long programs on Radio Sai and everything that we do at Radio Sai, I take leave. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. And even as I quit, you will listen to a drama entitled The Master Lives On, presented by the Sai Youth of Malaysia during the Buddha Purnima celebrations at Prashanthinilam on 15th May 2014. That will start at 9:50. Continue listening and let us immerse ourselves in His love, in His message, in His unmistakable presence. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.